What radio stuff do you do to get your voice going?
I just talk a lot, Derek.
So you're just like constantly ready to be an orator.
Two things. One, there are times where I've committed to do like a morning show interview or whatever, and I forget, and the call wakes me up, and I can just go. Like, I can just pretend that I'm awake and sound okay. But also, my best prep, like pregame, is I talk to myself in the car.
All right.
Which, by the way, doesn't look as crazy as it used to, because I could be on Bluetooth.
Could you do a podcast of Kevin Wheeler in a car by himself?
I should just record it. It's kind of where I try things out, because in my mind, things that sound good in your head don't always sound good out loud.
Oh.
So if you say them out loud, you're like, don't love that, or all right, yeah, that fits, whatever. It's kind of like trial and error.
Sounds like the origin of this podcast.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis, and that is, of course, as longtime listeners will know, the sound of Kevin Wheeler's voice. Kevin Wheeler, who is here in person.
Nice.
Well, we've mostly done recent chats online, so it's good to see you up at the Treehouse Studios, which are undergoing some renovations here, hopefully, of KMOX 1120 AM. I want to. You're in the afternoon show now,
yeah.
So every time I stop myself saying AM, because I almost want to say like 1120 PM.
Right.
But that's not. You're the afternoon drive show there at KMOX. How's that going? A little detached from sports, but if you're in St. Louis, you're always talking baseball.
Yeah. We talk. I mean, obviously, as the flagship, we talk baseball pretty much every day. But it's really cool, Derek, because, I mean, first of all, getting to work with, you know, Dave Glover and Rachel Zimmerman and Andrew Stolz, but it's cool. I mean, like, Dave's been doing this for more than 20 years in St. Louis. It's a cool show. It's not an easy thing to jump out of sports and just do everything, because there are some things that are not fun to do,
mm-hmm.
Like everything that relates to politics, just not fun.
Right.
Requires more homework on my part, because stuff that I don't just do normally. Like, I still do baseball normally. It's still part of my regular habit. I watch just as much as I always have. I read just as much as I always have, because I'm a fan. But outside of that, I mean, we just have so much fun. It's such a great crew. And, you know, when you don't have terrible news or bad news or difficult news to cover, it's just 4 hours of just being fun and goofy. And, you know, Dave and I both like to do as much science stuff as we can, like cool science stuff and space. Dave loves Bigfoot. We both like aliens, like that kind of stuff. So
Dave
knows everything about Bigfoot.
And he calls him Bigfoot, not like Sasquatch.
Well, I mean, no, that's just the generic term that covers it. He's got it all.
The whole genre?
Yeah. He's got it down. I mean, if it's a thing in there, he knows it.
It's the Bigfoot genre?
Yeah.
I don't know much about that, so...
Really?
Yeah. That's too bad.
Come across?
It's fascinating. I mean, I've always loved
it. I know the different names, Yeti, Sasquatch, Bigfoot.
Yeah. No, I've always loved all of that stuff.
I know the comic book characters, like Alpha Flight and all that stuff. Yeah.
I didn't know that. See? You got that world down. I've always liked weird things just for fun, you know? I'm not a believer in anything without being able to measure it, see it, do all that kind of stuff. But I'm interested in everything like that.
So speaking of not being a believer unless you can measure it, see it, do it, what do you make of the Cardinals? They are what the record says they are. That's the biggest measurement of them all. We're coming up on Mike Claiborne Day, which is Flag Day, which you can start looking at the standings. They won't be out of last place by then. It's unlikely that they will be. They're 12 games under 500 as we're talking. They're about to start a series with San Francisco. This podcast will come up after the results of the first game. But what do you make of them? Speaking of, you know, not buying into something unless you have the data to prove it, are their chances of winning this division, are they tiptoeing into Bigfoot territory?
Yeah, I'd say so right now. I mean, to me, they've been like, there's almost like three different versions of this team so far this year, right? Like the very beginning, and I don't have it like down to like game one to game eight or whatever. I don't have it segmented, but in my head, the way the season's played out, the beginning was largely a problem with starting pitching. Starting pitching was really bad. They weren't getting deep. It was impacting the bullpen. You're behind all the time, and you needed to score a lot of runs to win. There's that portion. That's the terrible start to the season. Then you have the resurgence. That was offense. That was the offense just going. I mean, Arenado crushing left and right. Nolan Gorman. Like, they were scoring runs pretty easily there for that stretch where they were winning. Mm-hmm. And now
they're doing it against good pitching.
Right, right. Exactly right. Didn't matter who was pitching. I mean, they were hitting everybody. And then since that time, there's been a cooling off, as we've seen. And that feels like it's more of a loss of, like, the basics. Like, this thing, the things that this team always talks about is what they're not doing. They're not doing the little things. I was looking at this over the weekend, and it might have changed a little bit with Sunday's game, but I don't think markedly. If you look at, like, runs scored, like 12th in Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. runs allowed, like 13th or 14th, something like that. So when you're thinking of just how many runs you score, how many runs you allow, you should be somewhere middle of the pack, not last place, not bottom three in the National League. Like, fielding independent ERA, middle of the pack, I think 14th or 15th in Major League Baseball. You know, like weighted runs created plus. So if we're going into the more analytical approach, I think, again, same thing, like 12, 13, 14 in Major League Baseball coming into the week, and you're the worst team. Or up until recently, we're the worst team in the National League, and you're the third worst team, I think, coming into play now. But you're in last place in a bad division. Mm-hmm. How do you square that, right? How can you be basically middle of the pack in the offensive and the pitching ratings? And not all of them. Some are a little bit off. But, I mean, like, fielding independent is a pretty good general catch-all. Expected fielding independent is about the same, like 15th, 16th. So when you're starting to look at batted ball numbers and things like that, you're okay. You should be like a 500-ish team, but you're not. Well, first of all, it's a lack of consistency. Mm-hmm. There are too much. There's like all or nothing, right? 18-1 wins and things like that, and too many one run losses.
16 of them.
Yes, and 10 in the last 16 games. Mm-hmm. Right? Or is it 10 games and 8 losses or something like that in the last 16 games? Yeah. 10 one-run games and 8 of them are losses, something like that. And that's where we see those things that we all call the little things. And tip of the cap to Bernie Miklas. He posted these last week. And, you know, I know you've talked about it. I know I have looked into them too. But the defense has not been good. Defensive run saved. You're now near the bottom of the league where you've been traditionally top 10 in the recent years. Base running is typically top 10. And it's in the bottom 5, 6, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, so when you're playing a lot of close games, like in the last 16 games, you've played 10 one-run games. You've played 12 games, 2 runs or less. Mm-hmm. That's where you lose those games, with small things, with a defensive play that doesn't get made, that leads to an inning that gets away from you, mm-hmm. or at least plays a role in it maybe getting further away than it should.
3 runs the other day.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's just one example.
And there were no errors on the scoreboard, but there were like 3 like plays not made.
And those are the things that should be fixable, right? Like, hitting's really hard. Sometimes you're just going to stink at it for a while. Like, it's very difficult to pin down. But if you can't do those things that you, as an organization, brag about all the time and take such pride in all the time, well, that's what needs to get fixed probably first and foremost, so that these close games, at least some of them, flip, right?
Yeah. I wonder if it comes down, if I'm going to boil it down to 2 simple parts, right? One is they're 2-for-22 with runners in scoring position. Mm-hmm. But more to the point, it's how they hit with runners on base, not just with runners in scoring position, and not just actually hits, but how they approach those at bats. There was a distinct lack of situational hitting, particularly against the Reds. There was not the piling on of runs when they had the opportunity against the Pirates, and both of those series went sideways for the Cardinals. So it's a case of leadoff double doesn't advance. You know, 5 times against the Reds in the series finale, they got the leadoff runner on base. Twice that runner scored. 3 times that runner didn't advance. Like, with no outs, did not move. It's things like that where it's not even a hit, because you know how they lost those games. Mm-hmm. It was Ellie De La Cruz creating runs without a hit.
Right.
So now his speed is a huge part of that, but that is possible, and that's where that edge was. So I think that's the first part, is it's not just the lack of timely hitting, it's the lack of situational production. And that doesn't show up in the runners in scoring position, batting average, or OPS. But it does influence that. Okay. And also, that has been bad. The other part is exactly the De La Cruz example. Or you can do the Shelton example back in Pittsburgh. The other teams are beating them.
Yeah.
the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Cincinnati Reds played better baseball and were better teams than the Cardinals. It says something when the Cardinals would have stolen a game from the Reds. And so, you hit on it. I think the Cardinals have run into teams that are playing like them and playing better than them. And I don't know if there's A, time, or B, a roster to catch up.
Yeah, I mean, typically to make the kind of run that we're talking about, one of the things that can do that is high-end starting pitching, right? A couple of pitchers can go out there and
they
can just dominate, right? So you're going to need...
three-headed monster to make it roll.
That's it. So you're going to need Jack Flaherty to stop with the Jekyll and Hyde. And it's been a lot better recently, but it's still like one or two really good, and then one you're like, what happened there? But they need him to
be... A lot of walks.
Yes, exactly.
And that's why.
Yeah. And they need him to be a more consistent version of his good self. He doesn't have to be his best self all the time. Mm. They need him to be a more consistent version. I'd say the same thing kind of for Miles. I mean, he gets going and you're like, all right, Miles is back. And then you get five runs in five innings. And you get that like two steps forward, one step back. Mm-hmm. Where he's not been bad by any means, but they need better. And I'd say the same is probably true for Jordan Montgomery. He was really good in April. It's been a little bit less good since then. But they need those three guys to be consistent. Mm-hmm. And I think overall, consistency is the biggest problem for the team. Right? I mean, if you were to like try to just take an umbrella and put it over all the things we've talked about, they just don't do anything consistently. They'll do things at times, and then they don't do it at other times. And it's hard to put together long stretches of winning if you're not going to be consistent at these things. And, I don't think it's fair to put the expectations of quote-unquote raising the game on Adam Wainwright. I mean, he's in his 40s. It's not an easy thing to do, and he wasn't expected to be that coming in anyway. Mm-hmm. I do think that it's going to be interesting to see how they handle Matthew Liberatore in that spot, whether it's keeping him in there or letting him go through some rough patches, or do they make a change quicker and go back to Matt's. I really don't know exactly how that looks, which is why the other three are the ones that they're going to need to be the best versions of themselves for a couple months.
Yeah.
And then you can maybe assess what you need in mid-July going into late July. And I think the ideal July is you do something that makes you better now and next year. Mm. That would be the ideal, right? Because they need starting pitching for next year. I think there's no question. And they need somebody at the front end. So I don't know that I would make a move on a rental. Not unless you have some kind of understanding that person wants to stay. I don't know if you get a window to talk about a deal or whatever. But barring that, you're going to want
a roll-in type deal, right?
Yeah. Something where you could have a conversation in advance of a trade. Be like, because you have to get permission, obviously, to do that. Would you be interested in staying? But even that's so complicated. I don't know that that's even a realistic idea.
Yeah, you run out of time at the trade deadline. Yeah. That's kind of an off-season thing because the player doesn't want that pressure either.
Plus, they want the free market.
Right.
I mean, that's where they're going to get the best contract.
Right.
Is when you have three or four teams bidding on them.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to go to a guy and say, hey, we're going to trade you and upend your life. And that guy go, okay. Oh, by the way, we also want like a friendly deal that gives you security. Because security sounds good right now, doesn't it? Yeah. It's kind of like a lot of different mixed messages there.
It's tough. And again.
But that's Bieber, right? I mean.
Somebody like that. I mean, somebody that's at the front of end of a rotation on a team that's clearly not likely to keep them.
And
there aren't many of these kinds of guys that you can think of that are like top one or two. You're probably not going to get one of the very best pitchers.
Right.
But somebody that fits in the top two spots of a rotation of a playoff team. And Bieber's that.
Is he the only one, though, that also has a year of control? And he might actually be the only one. Unless the Marlins, but the Marlins are in it.
Right.
So why would the Marlins weaken their young pitching staff? Because they have control, too. But that doesn't make much sense for them.
Not for them, no. Not unless they fall back and they decide that they have more pitching coming. And I'm not sure that they really do on the high end. I think it's more like lower end guys and younger guys. Mm-hmm. So they're probably not the best example. There might be an example like, I don't know, maybe you target somebody with the White Sox. Maybe you look at
Lucas Giolito.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe you try to blow them away because they're in a weird spot. Like what they're doing just isn't working. Which is similar to the Cardinals.
Yeah.
I mean, like, their roster is better than their record, and I'd say the same is true for the Cardinals. Maybe there's some kind of mutually beneficial mix
Like oh, but 2011 you, when
yeah,
they're
I mean yeah. yeah something like that maybe you know, there's rumors that there I know he's hurt right at the moment but you know there's talk that they might move Liam Hendricks maybe there's a way for you and them to there's a Helsley Hendricks swap involving and then there's a Liberatore Cease and maybe you're giving them something else from an area of your depth again please don't turn this into a rumor I'm just thinking off the top of my head but and he's having a down year like Cease has not been that great. His stuff is still good, but I watched him pitch like a week ago, and he was all over the place. He had no idea where anything was going.
Sounds like just the guy the Cardinals need to bring consistency back to their rotation.
He would easily, though, have the best stuff of anybody on the Cardinals.
Yeah.
I mean, as a starter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the guy that throws 97, 98 with some regularity and gets a lot of swings and misses when he's right.
I mean, do you think, and it's entirely fair, but do you think the Cardinals need that kind of lottery ticket? Because, you know, consistent certainty is hard to find. And over 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 again, the Cardinals have been uninterested in paying for certainty with pitching. Yeah. That is a high price for that. They have really targeted that mid-tier kind of group, and they get good results with Michaelis from that mid-tier group, and he pitches a couple-time All-Star, and they don't with Mike Leake and so far Steven Matz, and the list goes on and on and on. But so they want to pay that price for certainty. So your suggestion, they need kind of like that high-end lottery ticket type, almost like you're betting on Cease's stuff, or like if you go after a Chris Sale, you're betting on his health. Right. Like some kind of guy that like you have to bet on the high upside. And if it doesn't work, then they're not in a worse spot. But if it does work, they might be in a slightly better spot.
I think that's kind of the idea. I mean, in a perfect world, you would go bigger, like more somebody that is that guy.
Yeah.
And think about it this way. I get why they're averse to the big deals for pitchers because pitchers get hurt. I mean, look at Max Scherzer right now. Look at Justin Verlander. And
these
I know
guys are in their 40s.
No, I know. That's the extreme example.
Oh, yes, Scherzer's
it's
not
the
right.
extreme example. He's 38?
Yeah, but look at Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yep. So, that's like, make that choices. Been. That's yeah. the guy, right? Yeah. Like, make choices like that. Or John, like Gray, right? If Gray.
Great option, yeah. Great guy that had great stuff, but was in a bad spot in Colorado.
Yeah, and had some injury history, yep. And you wonder, okay, how are these related? And he, you know, wants a pillow deal, but like there were options out there, and the Rangers jumped at them. Yep. Now, Rangers, the Cardinals will argue that they are in a different spot than the Rangers. The Rangers, you know, if they contend this year, that's a perk, but they have spent a lot of money.
A lot.
And so I would argue that the pressure is kind of on for them to turn around and put a contending team, especially with the Astros and a new ballpark yep. and all that. So they took some risk. They took some risk, but they also, I think, like Eovaldi, Gray is a risk. Gray's a risk, right?
For sure.
But with a little more upside stuff wise. Yeah. I think that's kind of my idea.
Eovaldi is a smart move right there. Short, I mean,
shorter term, proven playoff performer, big stuff, too. I mean, like, we're talking even
strikeout
now.
Stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, you're talking about
a track record of at least, you know, being a guy who pushes deep into games. I think the Cardinals missed on that.
I agree.
Period. Yeah. And it, you know, the Rangers should be lauded for going after that, and every other team should be like, "What are you not doing? Like, what? Why aren't you? Why wasn't that guy more attractive to more teams?"
Yeah. And I think if we're gonna go bigger philosophy. You get this a lot, I know. I get it all the time, too, on Twitter, sometimes just in conversations with people in person things. But I know you get this all the time. Is like, they don't care about winning, the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And I think they care a lot. I think I think it's pretty obvious. Maybe I'm wrong. I think they've gotten overconfident.
Huh.
Like, what they've done for so long, worked for so long, they don't seem to want to change it. They don't seem to want to get with the times on swing and miss pitchers. People who can get you out of jams. Starters who can get out of jams by getting strikeouts. And not be so reliant on defense. I mean, I understand that what they've done for 20-plus years has really worked. But how's it working in the last 5 years relative to not just regular season success, but postseason success as well? I mean, what works in the playoffs when you're going up against a loaded lineup? Swing and miss works. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you can make every guy that, but you got to have somebody.
What?
I mean, you got to have a couple guys that... the way I'm saying this sounds like it's a must. It's not really a must, but I think it really improves your odds. The whole sport has turned towards strikeouts because it matters.
Well, because it masks and allows you to overcome other mistakes.
Yes.
Okay, so the strikeout for a pitcher is the same as the home run for an offense.
Correct.
Is it allows you to have sags elsewhere that you can overcome quickly. And if you don't have those sags elsewhere, then you're a titan. Then you're impossible to beat. The Cardinals, you make a great point. What the Cardinals' choices are catching up with them is they have sided with not chasing strikeout pitchers, in part because they just haven't wanted to pay the price.
Right, and they get hurt.
Or they get hurt, or they haven't developed them. Or they haven't had the health and all for those reasons. So they have doubled down on their defense. They have said, all right, well, we're going to take advantage of one of the best defensive groups in baseball. And they still have that. Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, and Tommy Edman, and Paul DeJong are among the best fielders historically at those positions. And Brendan Donovan won a Gold Glove last year with his performance at a variety of positions, right? Dylan Carlson is a good defensive player, above average right fielder, probably could be above average center fielder. Okay, so it makes sense, right? But it's catching up with them in this sense, Kevin, is what happens when they don't get efficient starts because their pitchers aren't taking advantage of the defense. And then what happens when the defense falters? Well, then they have to slug their way out of it, and they're not now. So these things are catching up with them because they do have the power to outslug their mistakes.
For sure, yeah.
For sure they do. They do. But that's not as reliable as strikeouts. Like those, you know, like... They're not going to slump.
We're in the era that has the most strikeouts in the history of the sport, right, for a whole lot of reasons. I mean, it's not just one thing.
Right.
But and by the way, I want to be clear. I don't think there needs to be a wholesale change about how they do things.
Why not?
I think there needs to be an adjustment. What? Like, let's say you feel like these guys in general, there's too much risk involved with an Eovaldi or even a Dylan Cease. You know, the guys that just go out there and throw 97, 98 and get strikeouts. I get that. I understand it. And 50-60% of the time, you can side with the Miles Michaelis types.
Yeah.
But you do at times have to make exceptions, and you have to shoot high. And you do have to sometimes realize, like, why are the Rays so good? Because they know what works in the modern game, and they take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
They develop strikeout pitchers. They deal with injuries. Tyler Glasnow's been hurt a lot. Has it stopped the Rays? No, because they plug in someone else, or they find a different way. They go with an opener, and then they mix and match. But they're going to find ways to attack the game in a way that it works in the modern game.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that many rock stars on that team. They got a lot of guys that are kind of maybe emerging, like Rosarena's becoming that. But he's not Juan Soto. You know, he's not that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But they find players that have these skill sets that work in the modern game. You think about where they have the power and patience guys all over their infield, how they have depth of guys. They go get a guy like Isaac Paredes from Detroit, who's a nothing burger there, and he comes to Tampa, and all of a sudden he's a legitimate everyday player who hits for power.
Yeah.
They know how to identify the skills that work in the modern game, and it's kind of like, my analogy with the Rays is kind of like what the New England Patriots did for a long time, in that Bill Belichick finds players that can do certain things well, and they only ask him to do those things. Mm-hmm. They don't put him in a position where they got to do things they're not good at.
The Cardinals did that really well for a long time.
Yeah,
Seth Maness stands out. Right now, the Cardinals are in a spot where they are not developing the kind of players that can help them dominate a division, can help them tread water in a division, but can help them dominate a division. And they're not maximizing what they get from guys at the major league level. The fact that, you know, like Dakota Hudson is not in the majors should really send up a flare.
Yeah.
Right? That's a high pick, power sinker, and clear issue with command.
Yeah.
The Rays sure have a track record of fixing that guy, right?
Well, it's funny when you listen to those guys too, and how they describe what they were told when they got to Tampa. It's pretty funny. Tyler Glasnow was doing an interview. This was a while back. I mean, it's like a year and a half ago. It was kind of when he first, maybe a little bit. It was right after the first season with Tampa where things turned around. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he goes, I got here, and he goes, they just told me this. Throw the ball down the middle. Yeah. You stop trying to paint the corners. Your command's not good enough. Your stuff is good enough that if you throw it down the middle with its natural movement and natural velocity and the life on your pitches, if you just throw it over the plate, you're going to have success. That was the change. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you kidding me? It's kind of like the Garrett Cole change. Right. He gets from Pittsburgh, and they're trying to get him to go sinker and pitch to the corners. And he gets to Houston, and they're like, dude, just
rip it.
Yeah, here, just fastballs up in the zone and four-seam fastballs up in the zone, and then rip off your breaking ball and just pound the zone because your stuff plays. Like, I don't want it to, it's not an indictment of everything the Cardinals do or all that have always done. I don't think they need to change everything they do. But there are areas where you probably need to get with what's happening now, because when you look down at the minor league level, who's the next guy that is this? Where's your strikeout guy?
Well, McGreevy, they want him to be, right?
Right, but he drafted a sinker baller. Yeah. I mean, he's a sinker slider guy. Those guys can get strikeouts. I'm not saying you can't.
Jerpy is a strikeout guy.
Right. And he's funky and goofy a little bit. No, I'm sorry, goofy. That's not the right term. But he's a lefty that's got some funk to him and some good stuff. Mm-hmm. But what's his performance level been this year? Is he dominating?
No,
he's not. Tink Hens has all the upside in the world. Mm-hmm. At the current rate of pitching innings, he'll be ready in 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
To start games in the major leagues, right?
No, I know.
And I'm not blaming. I don't know. I mean, they have a reason for doing it, and I understand it. He's a guy that needs a lot of work on his body. He was very young when they drafted him, and I understand that. I'm just saying, like, where's that guy that changes the dynamic? You know, I was kind of hoping, not this past spring, Derek, but the spring before when we saw some upticks from Gordon Graceffo and you started mm-hmm. to see a little bit of 98, 99. I'm like, all right, maybe. And he throws strikes. But it seems that that's ticked back down. I know he's had a shoulder thing too, so maybe that's why it ticked back down.
Right, right.
But this is the thing that is, I don't want to say easy, but it's easier than, and it doesn't have to be done with big money guys. It can be. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with spending on Eovaldi or going big on a starting pitcher. But a lot of teams that are finding those guys aren't doing it by just throwing money around.
Right.
They're finding undervalued assets, guys maybe that are underperforming somewhere else that have really good stuff. And I guess maybe the emphasis more on stuff is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Not just ability to throw strikes or pitch or whatever, but like pick up guys that have unique talents. A breaking ball that other people don't have. I mean, how many examples have we
seen? Puente's like that. That's the guy that they, I mean, he has a fastball that other folks don't have, you mm-hmm. know, and then like Zach Thompson is a little bit like that. He's got a curveball that should play up the, you know, with him. Libertor, no, probably not. But he has velocity that when he really channels his velocity, he's got above average velocity for a left-hander. So there is some of that. I think that like all you're describing is exactly right. I think there is something to the circumstances in which they develop players that cannot be overlooked. You know, like Sandy Alcantara, Zach Gallen, and Ben Fredrickson and I spoke about this on a podcast, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it here, is this notion that, like, you know, Adolis Garcia, you know, they go to teams that are, like, building towards something, and they're like, we'll give you innings, we'll give you playing time, we'll give you time to work it out and see what happens. Randy Rosarena is a little bit different because, obviously, the Rays have found a way, maybe them most of all, to be constantly competitive and with a governor of spending on them. But still, Randy Rosarena made the most of opportunity, even during quarantine, adding on muscle and strength and then becoming the player. So the Cardinals don't have that lab and I'm not talking about a pitching lab. Right. I'm talking about a lab like at the major league level. They don't have that lab. And so Tink Hens, you say he'll be here in 3 years.
I'm not predicting that.
No.
I'm just saying he's throwing like 3-4 innings a start.
No, I know. Well, he just got his first win, which tells you he qualified. But here's the thing. Like, when Tink Hens arrives and the Cardinals are in this constantly competitive mode, what's the likelihood that he's going to get a long look as a starter? Is it zero? Well, it zero? Because it sounds like it's zero. It's probably going to be zero if they're trying to contend. And he might get here as a spot starter. He might have the Libertor, up and down. He might have the Jake Woodford up and down. And what kind of development is that for him? Or he might get here and be a reliever like Zach Thompson until a few months in when they say, hey, man, we're going to take a guy with some of the best stuff who's actually been pitching pretty well, and we're going to subtract him from the 2023 team and get him ready for 2024. Like, what kind of development plan awaits Tink Hens if this is how the Cardinals are going to perceive that they have to stay constantly competitive? Because you know what? It's not one that's worked for any of these other guys. What pitcher can you say has maximized their ability coming out of the Cardinals organization here recently?
Well,
Ryan Helsley?
As starting pitchers, the guys that actually got in and stayed in and got a chance to pitch at the major league level were Carlos Martinez, Jack Flaherty.
Again, maximize their ability.
Right, but this is
probably Carlos. Carlos. Yeah.
Again, injuries derailed Carlos and other things. But injuries are also the part of the derailment of Jack Flaherty up until recently, which is, again, normal. It's going to happen. I think that's a fair point. In as far as how you give opportunities, but you also made choices in who was available in those deals, right? Like, you could have
team made choices,
sure. And you and again, to make a trade, you have to give in. I mean, you're not always going to be able to just lay the terms down like fantasy baseball or MLB the Show, and get the agreement on the other side. It's not an easy thing.
MLB the Show gives you the cards. They show you what the other team is holding, and you do the math to figure out. That's not how trades work.
No, it definitely not. And there's also like 30 different ways that players are viewed and valued and evaluated.
Absolutely.
Do we trace all of this back? And I don't want this. We can't start too deep here because I know we're going to run out of time. But how much of this whole thing with pitching problems actually traces back to their inability, going back a handful of years, to develop offensive players?
It's all related.
I mean, because you had to trade away Alcantara and Gallen to get Marcelo Ozuna because you didn't have... I mean, we know that what happened with Oscar Tavares is a tragedy, but you didn't. There really wasn't anybody of significance as a major league middle-of-the-order hitter that was developed by the team between Albert and Tavares.
Well, Matt Carpenter.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Matt Carpenter's a good one. Yeah.
I mean, Matt Carpenter was the one.
Yeah, that's a good call. But, I mean, still... That's a long window with like three guys.
Not an outfielder.
No.
They go through all those outfielders and they traded some guys, Randall Grichuk.
Yeah, they got to get that right at some point, don't they?
Right.
Well, this is the got to figure out the outfield.
Right. Yeah. We'll leave on this note because you know who could be in the All-Star outfield? It could be, of course, Randy Arozarena, Adolis Garcia, and from your Washington Nationals, Lane Thomas. Your All-Star outfielders with Cardinal ties. How about that?
That would not. I mean, good for them. I mean, there's nothing wrong. I don't want to root against any of them. And I'm not sure that, like, Adolis Garcia solves all your problems here.
Well, this is the thing.
But, I mean, there's a defensive player who's one of the best throwers in Major League Baseball in the outfield. And he's an elite power producer. And he's been healthy mostly, right?
Yeah. And you know what? I don't know if Randy Arozarena becomes the current Randy Arozarena if he stays a Cardinal. I don't know if Adolis Garcia becomes the current Adolis Garcia if he stays a Cardinal. I have serious doubts that Zach Gallen becomes Zach Gallen if he stays a Cardinal. He likely is Jake Woodford.
It's an interesting question, yeah.
I mean, it's really what they've really been good at, like in terms of development, has been like the Tommy Edmonds, and the Brendan Donovans of the world, right? They're really good at finding those guys.
Yeah.
And developing them and finding a role for them and getting them in there. And the big dudes have always been the trade acquisitions. You know, it's Goldie and Arenado. Now, maybe Gorman's the new exception and maybe...
Absolutely. Good to bring up Gorman.
Yeah. Maybe that's the trend.
And then Walker.
Hopefully Walker continues that trend, right?
Yeah.
So
that would be something, their answer for,
but keep in mind,
for middle order.
Those two guys were really big deals when they were picked, especially Gorman, because the Cardinals weren't picking power hitters at the top of drafts.
Not at prep power.
Right, right. So they changed what they were doing, because for a long time it was all college pitchers and then guys like Colton Wong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Kind of known college bats type guys. And they went more for upside with Gorman and Jordan Walker. And it's clearly working with Gorman. It sure seems to be on the right path with Walker. His power is unmistakable. And I think the other things, like the defense will come. I think he's a talented enough player with experience. He just needs reps. So maybe those things will symbolize the change in that regard. And maybe a similar change will start to happen with the way they evaluate and pursue pitching.
The times they are a-changing.
Hope so.
I mean, again,
it's the Cardinals. Is it time for them to be a-changing?
Adapt. I don't want to throw everything out that you do well. Keep what you do well and adapt and adjust in a couple of areas where you've not done well.
That is Kevin Wheeler of KMOX, 1120 AM. You can hear him every weekday afternoon there at the Mighty Mox, 1120 AM, and online at
KMOX.com.
And you guys, do they do the shows again as podcasts?
Every show is podcasted. Some segments are podcasted separately. DGS, I mean, the Dave Glover Show, for those that don't know the shorthand. This show is unbelievably popular on podcast. Unbelievable. I mean, like,
it's the second best podcast. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, it's different. They're different, right? This is this is baseball. Yeah. That's not baseball.
Yeah. So this is different.
Yeah, yeah. You're not talking Bigfoot.
Not talking Bigfoot, but we are talking about a team that might have to do something a little magical thinking to get back in contention,
Or just I don't think everybody. You get a lot of the tear it down, start over. No. Just retool on the fly. I don't think you're in a spot, especially with Goldschmidt and Arenado, where you want to be thinking about redoing anything. But you do. You're probably going to need to tinker a little bit and retool on the fly if you don't have a big run leading up to the deadline.
That is KMOX's Kevin Wheeler. You can find him at 1120 AM KMOX. You can find all of the Constant Cardinals coverage from the Post-Dispatch at stltoday.com. And, of course, in the pages of the newspaper that arrives at your porch. The best podcast in baseball is available wherever you get your podcasts, including iTunes, where you can rate and review the podcast. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Some real exciting things ahead as the best podcast in baseball goes international. The Cardinals are off to play the Cubs in London, so BPIB will be over the pond, and we're planning some podcast like event there. Looking forward to it. We'll have details. For Kevin Wheeler of KMOX, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. This has been the best podcast in baseball. Talk to you soon.
Hi, this is Jeff Grunder from The Machine Shed. If you don't feel like cooking tonight, let The Machine Shed take care of dinner for you. Try the mouth-watering, aged to perfection T-bone steak or fresh grilled salmon. Cook just the way you like it. Have the salmon pan-seared in a white wine cream sauce or roasted on a cedar plank with a Machine Shed signature apple bourbon glaze. Now that's cooking. See you there for dinner tonight. The Machine Shed, I-80 and Northwest Boulevard, Davenport.